Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. Thanks for being with us. This week, we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Remember, you can still email your questions in for the mayor to ask, that is A-S-K, at WBAA.org. Good afternoon, Mayor Barton.
Good afternoon. It's good to be here as always.
Wonderful to have you. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
So as of noon today, I just checked these numbers. ISDH updates their report again at noon every day. So the Indiana State Department of Health is reporting 234 COVID-19 cases in Montgomery County and 17 deaths when we spoke a month ago. I think we've said this before, so much can change over a month as we have these shows. Montgomery County was at 29 cases and zero deaths. And yesterday, the Montgomery County Health Department announced a cluster of 15 cases at Acuity Brands Lighting in Crawfordsville. And in their press release, they said the MCHD will continue to work with Acuity to monitor and mitigate the infection within the facility and to help decrease transmission in the community. And then said social exposures outside of the workplace appear to have contributed to the cluster. So is that kind of situation, that kind of cluster, concerning to you in your area as the state is continuing the push towards more fully reopening at the beginning of July?
Well, anytime we see a cluster or, you know, what we call a hot spot like that, we become concerned. And I think that's been the approach, to be a little more, you know, specific and surgical in how we approach this and really identify through testing those areas that you know, have a higher rate than normal. And so that's what's happened with that particular industry. I visited that industry with the health department and the county health officer a few weeks ago, and I know they've been very engaged since that time in trying to sort through this. And that's really what you come up with is, you know, how much of this is attributed to what's happening, you know, inside the facility while people are at work, and how much of it is those social relationships outside of work. And in this particular case, they had noted that they're, you know, very strong relationships, interpersonal relationships outside of work, that they felt like was a factor. I don't know how much that plays into it. I mean, it could well be a factor, but I find it, you know, really kind of hard to believe that socially the people in that particular industry or that particular factory are much different than people in other industries, which we've had a much lower rate. So, you know, it's been a combination of looking at what's going on outside and really educating, and then also looking at the workflow and the process inside that facility.
Certainly. And I think, you know, what we're talking about here, again, they're using the expression outside of the workplace. Is there a broader lesson, I guess, for Crawfordsville residents that regardless of what your workspace is, everyone does still need to be careful when they're out and about?
Oh, there is. And really, I think that's what the health department had been seeing, that, you know, you would have one person testing positive and then they would do the contact tracing and find out, you know, they were at an event last night, you know, a gathering, social gathering, and there were 20 some people there who are now, you know, technically should be quarantined and should be careful for 2 weeks. So, you know, people, I don't think, were really grasping. You know, I think it was misleading when the state came out and said you can now have X number of people together, and where are we at now, like 100 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You can, but you still have to maintain that social distancing and be careful. And that really hasn't always been the case in some of these instances. I know, you know, that particular industry had noted that they had people off and then they would see them together in the park, you know, playing frisbee golf or something like that. So I just think there's a lot of confusion on the part of the public and how you can still come together but maintain your distance and try to reduce the risk.
I do think that people hear the number, which was initially 25 and is now 100, and then we'll go up to 250, hear the number that's allowed to be in a gathering, and then perhaps don't think about the second part of that, which is, yes, you can have that number according to the state of Indiana, but you have to do it in a responsible way.
Yes.
You can't be close together. You have to practice proper hygiene and social distancing. And another, you know, ongoing source of COVID-19 cases and the source of a number of Montgomery County's reported COVID-19 deaths of course, is the Ben-Hur Health and Rehabilitation Center in Crawfordsville. What can you tell us about what's been happening and that at that facility?
You know, I'm not real involved in what's happening there, and I know the health department and the health officer have really taken the lead there and been very involved in working with them. Obviously, you know, it's a very serious situation, and they're doing excuse me, everything they can to stay ahead of that. But it does just show, you know, when you get this infection in a controlled environment like that, especially in a high-risk population, it can just take off, and that's what we saw in this case. We've not seen cases in our other extended care facilities, which is, mm-hmm. we're very, very thankful for that. So, you know, hopefully lessons learned and trying to contain what's going on in that particular facility. But I've not been directly involved in anything that's happening there.
About a week after we last spoke, Governor Eric Holcomb announced the stages of Indiana's reopening plan. So we're in stage three now, but let's wind the clock back a bit, start with stage two. How did that go in Crawfordsville? How have the reopenings of places such as restaurants and hair salons gone? How has the city worked with those businesses to get them up and running?
Well, it seems to have gone fairly well. I mean, we've not really noted, you know, any real issues or problems. You know, and again, the health department worked with them on, you know, customizing the guidance to fit their particular situation and the layout of their business and so on. And we just tried to facilitate those conversations. It was interesting that, you know, that when restaurants could open at 50% capacity, a large number of our restaurants still have chosen not to open. So they're doing curbside, carry out, drive through, that kind of thing, but still do not have dine-in services, which has probably been a good thing. It's allowed the community to kind of ease into this and really allowed us to watch those numbers to see what's happening and see what the impact of reopening is. And the key number for us that we're always watching is hospitalizations. You know, the testing, the positive numbers can fluctuate so much based on how much testing is being done. That's the bottom line. So you can see that number shoot up. You can see it, for example, right now it's been in a little bit of a lull because we went 3 days, mm-hmm. 3 day holiday weekend without any testing unless somebody went to the emergency department. So you see a lull in numbers. So that number fluctuates a lot and there are a lot of variables there. But the actual hospitalization rate is what we've been watching, and that has steadily declined and is actually very low right now in our community.
So how many, you know, would you say, if you had to ballpark it, how many restaurants did elect to reopen in the sense that they were allowed to by the state?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I would say probably less than half that, mm-hmm. that could have reopened have actually reopened to, you know, indoor dining. And now we're seeing it kind of gradually start to, you know, some of them are starting. I saw one earlier this week that had been closed that now is going to start, you know, working their way back into it. So it appears to be a gradual thing, but right out of the gate was probably less than half, which I think shocked a lot of people.
Why do you think that is?
I think everyone thought that, you know, if you rewind it and you think back through this, when the state first ordered them to close, I mean, there were business restaurants saying, we're not going to do this, you know, we're not closing, we're going to keep going. And then I think everybody thought, so when, you know, the date came that they could reopen, open the floodgates and everybody's going to open the door and, you know, go back to normal. And that just didn't happen.
Have people been going back to restaurants that have been opening? Do you have any sense of that?
You know, it's been interesting. I've watched some of those and people have been going, but, you know, I expected to see, you know, maybe lines and people outside because it's 50% capacity. Some of these restaurants before the pandemic, you would wait in line. If you went on a weekend night, you know, if you weren't there early, you're going to wait. And so I kind of thought, well, wow, now they're at 50% capacity. This is going to be an issue. I have not seen a line at any restaurant, and I've not seen it at an issue at any restaurant. So there are people in there, but I think people are kind of sensing, you know, oh, there's already a few cars here. I think I'll come back another time or I'm not going to come. So it's not been overwhelming by any means.
Do you think that people are still feeling some concern for their safety, for their health by going out into
a
restaurant?
Yeah, I think that's a factor with a lot of people. You know, there are people who have identified, you know, hey, I'm probably high risk and I don't want to take any chances that I don't have to take. And I think there's been some good information come out recently showing, you know, realistic risk assessments from different activities. And certainly being inside for the time that it takes to sit down and eat a meal in a restaurant with other people, I mean, it's not high risk, but it certainly increases your risk by doing that. So I think there are people out there who, and I've heard people say, look, I'm gonna give this a little bit more time. You know, someday I'll be back in the restaurant, but not yet.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking right now with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. So stage three of Indiana's reopening plan, which we're currently in, was scheduled to start this past Sunday, May 24th. Then the governor announced it would actually start 2 days earlier, on Friday, May 22nd. The day after that announcement, the governor said playgrounds, which were supposed to be reopened in stage three, would now not be reopening in stage three. So first of all, how did you handle that back and forth? And how does that impact city officials and staff as you're trying to make a plan based on certain dates and assumptions?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that it isn't. We tried to build into our reopening plan some cushion there, so we didn't necessarily put all of our reopenings right on the date that had initially come out, because I think the governor made it clear when he put that plan out, this could change, and we knew that, and we knew probably wasn't going to move forward, although he did move that a couple of days forward. But so we built some cushion in there, but the playground thing was one that was very interesting to me. Because if you looked at some of the things that opened and then playgrounds were and then they weren't, so it wasn't a big deal for us. It's not a real formal process. We just left them taped off and it kind of went on. It's not like we had untaped them and opened them all the way up. So we did make a change from our reopening plan to the city pool. We had originally, based on that plan the governor laid out, we had thought, well, we'll be good to open this on Memorial Day weekend, kind of as normal. then as we looked at that, really made the decision that we need to push this back. The parks director had spent time talking to other cities with pools and, professional association. They'd had webinars trying to sort through all the little issues that happen when you have a pool. And she'd come to me and said, I don't think we're going to be ready that day. I want to move this back to mid-June. And we've done that. So our pool is not open yet.
What were some of the issues that were being pointed out that would make it more difficult to open earlier?
Well, primarily maintaining that social distancing, in the pool setting, because, when kids go to a pool, they play. I mean, that's why they're in the pool. They play and they're on top of one another. And they're all the surfaces around the pool. There's not a real good way to keep those clean between people and just a lot of things come into play there that was making us a little uncomfortable with protecting people in that environment. So we'll give it a few more weeks and then we'll open.
So the thought process is that over the next few weeks, you are going to solve some of the issues that you're describing.
Yeah, that is part of the thought process. The other part of it is that we're pushing out, hopefully the testing will be even better and we'll have a better handle on what's going on in the community. And that curve's been flattened a little bit more by that point as well.
Something I also think is really key about stage three is that it starts bringing these kind of physical contact spaces back into play. And I keep asking people this very specific question. And so I will ask you also, again, what are Crawfordsville residents being advised about playing a basketball game? How can you open up a basketball court and have people be safe in that kind of physical way?
We struggled with that, and there's been some challenges in this community. The basketball courts are tough because, basketball is a very physical, sport. You're literally on top of one another at times and touching, and then ultimately you're passing this ball around. We had some issues with softball with the same thing. Everyone says, well, softball, we're more than 6 feet apart, but you're throwing this ball from person to person to person. And that becomes part of the issue. So I'm not going to pretend that we have some good answers there. It's really just trying to educate people as much as possible and reduce the risk as much as possible. At the end of the day, do we have people show up and have big basketball events? Yeah, sometimes it happens. I mean, it literally does. But we're trying to stay ahead of it as much as we can and really educate people.
So It was announced yesterday that Lafayette canceled its annual 4th of July celebration and fireworks. I know that lots of different places are making decisions about this right now. I know I talked to Frankfurt Mayor Judy Sheets last week, and they're going to have the fireworks, but they're going to take away, you know, things like vendors and musicians. Just have the fireworks. So I know we talked about this last month, but, you know, what is the latest on what Crawfordsville will be doing for July 4th and how you're going to be handling that?
Yeah, ours sounds pretty similar to Frankfurt. We are going to have the fireworks themselves, and they will take place at Milligan Park from their normal location. We won't be having the food vendors and all those kinds of things that creates more of the what we call the Freedom Festival. That won't happen. And, you know, the decision whether or not to have fireworks is something that's really different for every community, because you have to look at the layout of where everybody congregates and how do they watch the fireworks and what else happens. And that's a tough call. We're just in a situation where ours is really spread out, and I feel like we can safely do it and maintain our social distancing. But there are other communities that it's more compact where they people view this and you can't do it. So I don't fault anybody for not having them. We just feel like we can do it safely in our situation if we forego the actual festival gathering kind of event.
So what are some measures you can put in place to encourage people to kind of, I guess, keep their distance from each other as they're watching the fireworks?
Well, any year I've been in Milligan Park and we have fireworks, people spread out. I mean, you don't see people really congregating and clustering too much. And if you do, they're probably families that are already together. If you do see anything, it's always been in the area of the main baseball field there that people would gather on there. So we're gonna have to make some changes to that so that we don't encourage all those people to be in that area, you know, kind of fenced in all together, and just, you know, create viewing areas that kind of scatter people around. But the thing with our fireworks, everybody has their own favorite viewing spot, mm-hmm. and people socially distance themselves, if you think about it. And there are multiple places around the community that people, that's where they go and their family goes to watch the fireworks. So I don't think we're really going to have an issue, because I've never seen a huge crowd in the park during the fireworks on top of one another. They're really spread out. Now, we're well aware that that could be a little different this year because so many places have canceled. So we could see our crowd be a little bit bigger than normal. And we'll work through that here in the coming weeks to find ways to keep people apart.
So that all coincides with stage five, which is, you know, the final stage of the Back on Track plan. Indiana's, you know, more fully reopened at that point, fuller capacity in businesses, gatherings of over 250 people allowed, fairs and festivals, all of those types of things are back on. And again, obviously, that's contingent on the circumstances at the time. But as you're looking out, you know, we're a little over a month away from that. How are you feeling about Crawfordsville's readiness to reopen to that degree?
We'll have to assess that, you know, looking at the data as we get closer, because as you pointed out, the data changes so rapidly sometimes. So if we're trending where we're at now or continuing to decline, then I think that's a good sign. If we're seeing that those numbers and hospitalizations are starting to come back up, then we may have to rethink that. And, you know, the locals can make it more restrictive, and we can certainly do that. We've opened up after July 4th. We can start having events at Pike Place with social distancing. That's one where I think we're really going to have to watch and learn, because some of the events there last year, I mean, it was pretty full. There were a lot of people there. So we're going to have to really rethink that this summer, which is very, very unfortunate. The whole premise behind Pike Place was creating a place for the community to come together, and it's done and up and running, and now we can't really come together. So, but it's a temporary thing. You know, we get through this season and we'll go from there. But you know, I really can't answer today where we will be come, you know, the first week of July. It's pretty far off.
So, and this is another big question, but, you know, you're raising an interesting point, which is after July, there's still going to be a need for mindfulness and planning. How far ahead are you looking as you're thinking about, you know, even when I don't have specific instructions, perhaps, you know, from the governor, you know, what are you thinking about in terms of guidelines and the thought process for the community to follow?
Well, we're just starting to have those discussions. And, you know, the health department and the health officer for me is going to be at the center of that discussion. I know they're very closely watching the data, very closely watching the trends. You know, and there are some larger events down the road in this community, with Ironman Raceway, for example,
right,
which is not in the city. So it's not directly a city issue, but we're profoundly affected by what happens there. And you literally have thousands of spectators and visitors coming in from all over the country, all over the world for some of the races. So, those are things we're going to have to really come together and work together on to create solid plans. And we're in the early stages of that. So that will be a joint conversation, a joint process, if you will, with the health department in the lead.
Montgomery County will be receiving, I saw, $1.2 million in funding from the CARES, or the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which will largely address expenditures that relate back to COVID-19. And then the county will also be getting a grant related to COVID-19 that essentially assists with law enforcement and the courts and related areas. And it was reported that this money would be shared with local government. So can you talk us through where Crawfordsville comes into that money and where some of those funds would be directed in the city, you know, what the areas of need might be?
Right. Well, I think the story that appeared in the newspapers was, to me, was not very accurate. And I'm not sure it was presented in an accurate manner in the meeting. So I'm not saying that the reporter necessarily had it wrong. Montgomery County is eligible for, I think it's $1.2 million in reimbursement from the CARES Act. Does not mean they're getting $1.2 million check from the federal government. And that's really what the story kind of led, I think, the reader to believe. So they're eligible for reimbursement up to $1.2 million. And the way that was calculated was based on the entire population of the county. The city is eligible for, I think, around $500,000 in reimbursement from the CARES Act as well. So on the county side, I mean, they've had a lot more expenses associated with responding to the pandemic because they have the health department and all those things than the city has. How much of that $1.2 million will they file a claim for and be able to recover? I don't know. I know they're working on that. The county administrator is, and the auditor. But it's only reimbursement. So these are expenses they've incurred, and it has to be very specific. Then they get reimbursed up to $1.2 million. The city could do the same up to, and it's 500 and some thousand. In our case, I can tell you it will not be close to 500 and some thousand. It's a much smaller number. We've had some expenses, but not huge expenses. And if you look, for example, at public safety overtime, we've had some, but not really a lot associated directly with COVID. Now, if the money could be used to offset lost revenue, and I think there's some misconception about that, that would be a totally different ball game. And they would eat up their 1.2 and we would eat up our 500,000, no doubt about it. But it cannot be used to make up lost revenue. That story was a little misleading and kind of led you to believe that it could.
Okay. Overall, how are you handling the resumption of normal in-person city functions? I know you mentioned that some of those spaces, again, were being reopened to the public maybe later on in June. It looks like some city departments will be doing the same as well. How are you bringing all of that back in person?
Well, June 15th is the key date for us. Monday, June 15th is when we will reopen City Hall. We will resume public meetings. So, you know, hopefully not have as many of the virtual meetings and resume the actual open public meetings with social distancing. And I can tell you on June 15th, we hit the ground running. There's a utility board meeting. There's a city council committees and then city council meeting all that evening. And we're going to have to rearrange how we do things. You know, I mean, if you've been in our council chambers before, the council kind of sits in a clump, and we're going to have to spread everybody out, which means taking people out of their routine and stuff like that. But we can do that. And so June 15th is that key day. City Hall opens, all the city offices open, and we will resume public meetings with social distancing on that day as well. So that's the key right there.
I've been talking with some people at different agencies here in Lafayette about the kind of looming possibility of increased evictions due to COVID-19 job or other financial losses. And the governor just extended the moratorium on eviction and utility disconnection notices to June 30th. So there has been a bit of a buffer put back in place there. But I guess, how is that issue playing out in Crawfordsville? Or is it, you know, are there concerns that there could be a wave of evictions or utility disconnections? And how is the city preparing for that possibility?
Well, there's a lot of concern. And, you know, it's a tough call, because sadly what happens is, you know, the, when you do something like that and you push that back, and, you know, I'm not criticizing, I think it was the right move at the time, but unfortunately what tends to happen is you allow people to get in deeper and deeper and deeper, and it becomes harder for them to dig out of it once that's gone. There's been a lot of discussion among mayors of how we're going to handle that on the utility side. You know, is it just, this is the moratorium's over, and if you're not paying, you're shut off? Or are you going to allow them some time to make that up and get back on track? And right now, where we are at in Crawfordsville, is the Crook Treasurer is assembling really kind of some data on how many people are behind, how far are they behind. I mean, I want to understand what it looks like here before we make any decisions. It's tough, because you know you have people who are out of work, who are struggling to pay those bills. We get that. And then we also have people who, if you can't shut them off, they're just not paying. I mean, that's all there is to it. And I hate to say that, but that's reality. So you've got to walk that fine line of, you know, helping those people who need help, but not allowing those who just refuse to pay to victimize everybody else who's paying their bill. Because there's this total misconception out there with utilities that, you know, if people don't pay, this just gets made up by the utility. Well, the utility is you. You know, the utility is you. And if somebody else is not paying, it gets tacked onto your bill eventually. And so we just have to make sure we walk that fine line, protect people, but yet not allow abuse.
And when do you expect to get those numbers so you can start making a decision by June 30th?
I should have them in the next week or so. She's working on that right now. And then we will, and I'm really spending time looking at the policies of other communities. There are multiple emails a day where mayors are submitting, this is our plan, this is our plan. And I can kind of look at those and get a sense of what everybody else is doing. So we want to do what's right, and we want to help people for sure. We don't want to create, you know, make a bad situation worse. But we just have to really look at how we work through this. And there's been a lot of contact from landlords, you know, to the city wanting help, and we just are not in a position to help them right now.
Mayor, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You can find this program on our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Frankfort, and Crawfordsville. Send us your questions for all four mayors to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.